Hello, I'm Steve Martin. Welcome to a special edition of Unreal Bluegrass featuring a conversation I had live with Tom T. Hall and Dixie Hall in January 18, 2014. Tom T. Hall has passed away as of August 21, 2021. The storyteller without legend, without dispute, a legend. Sometimes I mention conversations with the legend of those becoming. Tom Hall and Dixie Hall are solidly in the legend collection. Thanks so much for tuning in. If we've all weathered the storm and pushed all the right buttons, I believe I've been joined by none other than Tom T. Hall and Miss Dixie. Are you all there?
Yes. Well, good morning.
Are we?
Oh, wow. This is such an honor. I'm so pleased to be able to share your thoughts with the people listening to Worldwide Bluegrass. Everybody loves all the music that you've put together. And right before we went on the air, you were out farming this morning, Tom.
We have 60 acres down here, and we raise our own veggies, and we got cats and dogs, wild turkeys, deer, raccoons.
Squirrels.
Wait a minute. Are the skunks pets?
Got our own skunk, yeah.
Well, it's winter down there. You were up this morning out working, and as you said before the air, what was Miss Dixie doing? Were you out there slaving on the farm, Tom?
Looking out the window.
Yeah, I was riding the next hit, that's why, you know.
You were paying for that 60-acre farm, right?
Hey, I pay my way, Steve.
Listen, I know. You know what I was thinking, and I have to say this, I'm thrilled to death that you've called in. This is a wonderful opportunity to spread more to all the listeners who need to be reminded, not that they need to, just what a wonderful history of songwriting and storytelling both of you bring, and you still are part of the bluegrass world that's never left. And I was enjoying the music so much, I thought, oh my gosh, it's almost time for them to call. And I was having so much fun listening to what I had programmed into the first hour of the show that I was just having such a blast. I've got so many different little cuts. And Tom, let me ask you this, Tom T. The version, there's a very stripped-down version of Harper Valley PTA, which you and a guitar. And I put that in the first half hour of the show because I just like that. Was that a version that you were putting together to promote it or to sell it? You know the one I'm talking about?
No, I don't. I've never heard that version.
Well, it's just you. It sounds like a very young Tom T. Hall and a guitar. And I have a lot of different recordings that you've done, and I peeled it off of there because it's very stark and it's a little bit different inflection, of course, than the big hit that came out. But somewhere along the line, you put on tape. It almost sounds like you were putting it on to sell it or to send it out. I don't know. I just thought I would ask the question, but it's a great version, just real simple and plain. And
Yeah, well, you'll have to send us a copy of that.
All right, I'll do that. I'll send you a copy so you can have it. I don't think I got it in any secret way. I just happened to have it in the thing, and I thought, I really like the sound of that. And we've played Big Country Bluegrass. You're still writing tunes that are being recorded further down the line. We didn't get to a newer one, Feller and Hill. You're writing songs. You're writing hits for everybody. You're recording with the Grascals. My favorite song, Clayton, the year Clayton Delaney died.
That was fun. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you recorded that. And Kristen's been on the show, and I can tell you she enjoyed participating in that, and just what a wonderful tune that is. And I have to tell you this, too, before we get too far and I forget. Worldwide Bluegrass really is an international, worldwide, far-flung group of people. And I know since you're both into the storytelling, I have to tell you one quick story. And it's a touching story. There is an engineer who does all of the work for everyone who saddles up to this microphone and their computer terminal. And he's on the other side of the world. His name is Mike Rule, and he's in Australia. Wonderful guy. Sometimes I break my computer just to get to talk to Mike at midnight so we can just laugh, and then he fixes everything. Mike Rule told me last night that old dogs, children, and watermelon wine, he loves Tom T. Hall music and Miss Dixie. Old dogs, children, and watermelon wine was his favorite song. Then he got quiet, and this was the reason I want to tell you this. His father died rather young. His father was in an automobile, massive heart attack. The car wreck did not play a part in his death at all. But as they get to the car and they're bringing everything back in, pulls the tape of his father's favorite music out of the player, and it's playing that song. And he knew that his dad was enjoying his favorite music at that final moment. And he's still to this day. So I sent the song out earlier to Mike Rule, and I wanted to make sure that, that I think it's a touching story that, that means so much to him, even in that circumstance, that his father was hearing his favorite compilation of songs and his favorite song, Old Dogs, Children, and Watermelon. I think it's beautiful.
That's an amazing story. I spent a lot of time in Australia. I think I toured there 5 times. And met a lot of wonderful people and had some good times. And the strange thing about it, I was going to, when you said you were international, I was going to say hello to everybody in Australia. So there's some good karma going on here.
There you go. It was perfect. And you can still do that. You can still say hello to everybody in Australia. You can say hello to everybody in Japan. However many ones you want to do, you can do.
Yeah, I want to say hello to all my friends in Japan, too. I toured there one time.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a great time. I can't say hello. I can't say hello in Japanese, but...
Can you say it in Australia? Do you speak Australian, Tom?
I can speak Australian, yeah. But a lot of it you can't use on the air.
Well, I don't have a delete button, so save that for off the air. We'll talk later.
I don't know what I'm talking about there, yeah.
Yeah. He's introduced some new words to me, too, that I have to filter and figure out, okay, that's what he was saying when he was mad at my computer setup. So, I started off the show. Of course, I do the introductions, and today I plugged in right away Bill Monroe for breakfast. Now, knowing your penchant for telling stories in the wonderful way that you do it, that has to be reality, right? The whole setup for Bill Monroe for breakfast, you have to have been exposed to music in some fashion like that. Am I right?
I wrote that song in Australia.
Did you really?
Yeah, I wrote Bill Monroe for breakfast in Australia. I went down for breakfast one morning in the hotel I was staying in, and they were playing Frank Sinatra on the, the background music in the restaurant. And I told the waiter, I said, I loved the old Frank thing. I said, we don't hear a lot of him in America anymore because they, we live in a disposable society over here, and Australia hangs on to everything, They don't turn anything they like loose. And he said, Frank Sinatra, and you like Frank Sinatra? He said, you listen to him every day in America? I said, no, but I said, to tell you the truth, and I started to tell him that in America, we had Bill Monroe for breakfast every day. And I thought, well, maybe he doesn't know Bill Monroe. So I said, well, okay, and I had some coffee. And I went back upstairs and got my guitar and wrote Bill Monroe for breakfast. So there's another irony this morning.
That is, yeah. We should have broadcast this from Australia, maybe. I mean, everything seems to come out of there. It's
I guess so. We could have been outside at the grill, having some shrimp on the barbie.
Let me ask you this. Did you go back and find that fella and say, hey, I wrote this song after our conversation? You just figured he'd have to hear it later.
I haven't been back since then, no.
Okay.
Nice people.
Nice people, yeah. The
I go to the chickens and I get up at daylight every morning, so I'm usually sitting in these restaurants by myself in the morning before they even make coffee. I'm sitting there at an empty table, so that's probably why we were talking.
Okay. The as I go back and I'm lining up music, and there's no way in the world, and we're talking to Tom T and Miss Dixie, there's no way in the world that I can put together. And this is a 3-hour program, and I wanted to do an hour of mixing everything up, and it's a pretty good mix. There's no way in the world that I can put together everything that people might want to hear. There are so many songs that have come out of the both of you, and it's just a remarkable. And I know you're still writing because we still hear them being recorded by like we said, Big Country Bluegrass. Charlie Sizemore did an album of all your stuff a few years ago. We dropped in Pay No Attention to Alice in about the first 45 minutes, Is it something that you both just, you just gave an example there, Tom. You're talking to a guy in Australia, and in response to a question he has about music, you said you have Bill Monroe for breakfast, and you go upstairs and write a song. Is it that inspirational, or do you actually have time during the day when you say, I'm going to write a song today, and you go about it as a craft? What can you both of you explain that?
Yeah, when Miss Dixie and I are talking a lot of times, and we may be talking about anything, you know, maybe talking about, you know, the chickens eat some feed, or, you know, whatever, or the cats need some something, we're just talking about farm stuff, and all of a sudden somebody will say something, and Miss Dixie will say, write that down, you know, or else, hey, let's write that down, that's pretty clever, you know, so I think that's the way it's done. We just kind of ramble through it. We sometimes take trips, too, and we drive along, and we've written a lot of songs looking out the window.
Looking out the now, window.
How would you answer that question, Miss Dixie?
Yeah.
For once, he's right. No, you just never know where the next idea is coming from. Something just strikes you, and you make a mental note, but you can't leave it at that. You have to write it down, especially when you're getting as old as me. You tend to forget. But, we keep it going all the time. It keeps your mind active, and it gives you something in common, I guess, something you can fight about and then hang up the gloves and go on like it never happened, you know. But you can have a different opinion over a song, but in the end, it's all okay. And once you know it's finished, you know it's there. It's the best feeling in the world. It's like a new puppy coming into the world.
Mm.
And then, I'm trying to wake Holly up over there.
No. she's found. She's had her treat, and she's happy to participate as she's doing right now in the corner asleep. Okay, so you hear these ideas and you write them down, because, like, I mean, I would have to, and I'm an attorney during the week, and I have post-it notes all over the place, and I don't know what you might use. I guess you use whatever you can find to scribble that thought down.
Right, that's correct. Yeah, we've got a new one that's just out now. In fact, called Government Blues, and it's not political. It's about the government, but it's not political. It's just a funny kind of song. And
I think it's political.
Oh, now there you go again.
Get the gloves. Somebody get the gloves.
It was her idea. You know, you get up in the morning and watch the news. And
anyway, Feller and Hill just put it out, and it's it looks like it's doing pretty great. And of course, you know, we have the Stigma awards coming up in
right.
a couple of weeks.
Right.
Big Country Bluegrass is nominating the world, I think, except female vocalist. And I'm sure Tommy would. No, wait a minute. As a matter of fact, Teresa has a nomination in there. So, you know, we just keep on going. And with friends like Tommy Sales, and Tommy is just a real salesman. He's a great artist, great mandolin player. It's a fabulous group, and it's real, real bluegrass.
Yes, it is. Do you write? Let me ask you this, because I was
going to. Very traditional.
Yeah, I was going to ask you this question now that we're on, and we can put the.
Marcus, I think he's lining up something.
Go ahead.
But don't say anything that you wouldn't want him to hear. You know, just in case he might be eavesdropping on the side.
Hey, it's just
he
you. It's just
like
you
a
and
nice
me.
Guy, doesn't he?
So we're not going to ask him to send us any money, right?
No, that's not. I think that's supposed to go the other way. Aren't we supposed to send him money?
Listen, I tell everyone that calls in.
That.
I tell everyone that calls into the show. It's just you and me. So we're, you know, everything we say is just between you and me. And
you never know.
Yeah, and if you need to invoke any kind of privilege, I'm there for you too. Can you hear me now still? I think we've lost him. Are you hearing me on the other end? I would say no, or they would say something.
It sounds like they've had a wonderful show already this morning.
Yeah.
Are Tom and Miss Dixie? Can you hear me on the phone?
We're gonna have to make sure that. Brother Steve has the whole collection.
Let's, we're...
Oh, but there's been a lot of songs, hasn't there?
I think you're not hearing me. And the dilemma always is, how do I tell you can't hear me if you can't hear me? Here's what, if reason prevails, somebody's going to hang up and make the call back again. I can hear both of you, and you just can't hear me right now. Let's just see who hangs up first. This is like when you were younger and talking to your favorite boyfriend or girlfriend. Who's going to hang up first? They just don't know that if I hang up and they don't, then I can't call them back.
Microphone cord and two.
Let's see.
All right.
It'd be nice if they'd break out in a little song, because I can hear them and you can hear them, and they just can't hear me. All right. Tom T and Dixie, you can't hear me. I can hear them rustling around. Maybe they'll write a song about the time that they dropped the audio from a radio interview. All right. Nothing there. Now, if I hang up, you're going to have to be able to hang up and pick me up again. Let's try this again. That's great. In live radio, great. Let's see if they've hanged up their phone and I make this call. In the meantime, just talk amongst yourself, please. Talk all about the great music of Tom T and Dixie Hall, and we're going to find them back. I guarantee you we're going to find them. This is the time that I need my dog to bark. Normally, she barks if somebody's on the line, and right now nobody's on the line, so... and she's very quiet. Here's what we're going to...
Press 1 for more options.
Oh, I don't want more options. I want Tom T and Dixie Hall. You're still listening to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass, I guarantee it. I'm still here. It's so unreal now that Nashville has vanished. Maybe there's been a big storm down there. Tell you what, let's play a song, and we're going to go right into the Grascals version of The Year That Clayton Delaney Died. And we'll be back in a minute. I'll catch him again. We're not done by a long time.
Recording.
Shot. All right, we're back. And I think that Tom T and Dixie, you're back.
We're here.
You just took a little break, that's all. You couldn't hear me. I could still hear you. Everybody else could still hear you. And but now we got you back again. And as I was telling people on air, it's hard to tell you can't hear me, hang up so I can call you back, because you can't hear me. So don't go anywhere.
Well, it's... no good us offering to pay you anything under the table, is it?
No. But it did give us a chance to go back, and while I hooked back up with you again, I was playing the Grascals version of The Year That Clayton Delaney Died, and we were talking about how that came about to be recorded, and it's still my favorite song, and I love the new version also, but Tom, if we could just maybe pick up where we were off the air, and you were talking about how you got on that record with the Grascals. That's the one they released through the Cracker Barrel, I think.
Yeah, Terry Eldridge called me, you know. And Terry has been an old friend of the family for really...
He's a friend of my fried chicken, that's what it is.
Terry hangs around, and I don't do a lot of that stuff anymore, but Terry called me, and I couldn't turn him down. And we went over to the studio just across the street here, not very far from where we live, and visited with the Grascals and had a great time, and they've all been out here, and we've known Kristen, I guess, since she was a little girl, you know?
Since she was a baby,
yeah.
And she was picked with Sally Jones.
That's right. I saw her with Sally Jones. She played with Cordell for a while, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you said right before we got connected up again, Miss Dixie, that she's a daughter of the Bluegrass. Talk a little bit about the Daughters of the Bluegrass.
Oh, Daughters of Bluegrass has been one of our efforts this past year. Put out a 4-disc box set of a collection of all the women, most of the ones who count anyway, in Bluegrass, and Kristen that played banjo on the Laurie Lewis cut of Hound Dog Blues.
Mm.
And she did it proud, but Kristen is just totally, totally awesome, as are many of those girls.
Oh, sure. And when you're talking about Kristen was on the show, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I'm just a big fan of her playing, And you can say many things about her, but you can say this for certain. Does she ever make mistakes? I mean, you watch her play, and she plays such great music, and it's so clean. And, you know, she might in her head hear a mistake, but it's like she's right on it all the time.
She is. She totally is.
Yeah.
And she's pretty good at picking out husbands, too.
Yeah, Wayne's a good guy. I agree with you there.
Yeah, and she was raised with a basset hound. Her mama had basset hounds. So we have a lot in common.
Can you both believe, and I was there, and I have written down in my notes 2007, there was a big showcase at IBMA, and it got started late on that night, and I know that both of you were up there for a long, long time, but can you believe it was 2007? Am I right on my notes on that?
Probably, yeah, probably.
Was it IBMA?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and here was the thing. Besides all the great music and all these great people that came up and played all these different tunes that you all had written, you all had the job, and I kept thinking, wow, this is amazing. You had to sit backstage, you know, back at the back of the stage, and be still while everybody played for hours and what seemed like hours and hours, and then you got up and performed a little bit, but I thought, wow, how do you sit there and be so still?
Yes, Dave Evans was there.
Yes.
Isn't he awesome?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Pretty Green Hills.
Yep. You know? Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. And then you finally got up there, but you just sat so politely and so you know, perfectly still the whole time everything was going until it was your time to get up there. And I remember thinking, wow, that.
Well, we were probably enjoying the music as much as the people out front, so that would explain that.
Well, nobody left. Nobody left. It got started a little late, and it went late, and nobody left that I saw.
Well, I was either being very polite, or I fell asleep, one or the other.
If you fell asleep, Tom, you've perfected sleeping sitting straight up. And maybe you can do that.
Oh, no. It wasn't me then. Okay.
Oh, here's something I wanted to ask you, just totally off the wall. Do you have something against guitar straps?
Yeah, you can't... Every time you... I don't know how that got started. I never used a guitar strap. For one thing, you know, I played several instruments on my show. I played the piano and the harmonica and the banjo and...
Saxophone.
Anyway.
Elements of truth.
You know, you keep taking that guitar. So I guess I threw away the strap because I could just play the guitar and then sit it down, you know.
Okay.
And go do something, you know, so
okay.
I guess I got tired of taking it off, like taking your shirt off every 5 minutes, you know, and doing a show.
Well, you don't do that during a show, Tom T, don't you know?
No, really?
Unless you're doing something on the side that the rest of us don't know of, Tom, you rarely appear shirtless on stage.
Yeah, I don't think I've been shirtless on stage.
I don't think so.
But let me tell you this. I'm glad they didn't have cell phones and digital cameras back when I was in the show business. Stuff happened out there I wouldn't want any pictures of, you know.
Well, everything that happens is out there instantly.
Yeah.
In every little mistake.
I don't remember taking off my shirt, but I threw a lot of guitars in the audience and...
You threw guitars in the audience?
Yeah, I had some musicians, but I don't remember ever throwing my shirt out there.
Let me ask you this, and I will tell you this, it's probably too late to matter. Did you ever hit anyone with a guitar as you threw it?
No.
No.
You know, if we go to, sometimes, I got three guitars, so it didn't cost me anything. But we play for, you know, sometimes... If we had a big lot of people, like, you know, 25 or 30,000 people, you know, I figured I would have sound, so I'd finish the show and throw them a guitar, you know.
Okay.
I don't know what it was about. I don't remember exactly what I had in mind back then, but they never gave them back.
Well, I guess not. I guess not.
Yeah.
What is the, both of you, what is this strong tie with, of course, all the country, and I've been playing all the stuff that, and I hate labels, I really do, but, you know, I've played things on the show for the first hour that clearly are in that country category, and I got more to play, but what is the bluegrass, what, in your heart and soul, what is the bluegrass attraction for both of you?
Oh, I grew up in Kentucky, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the homeland, you know, where bluegrass music got started,
sure.
According to Bill Monroe. I didn't live that far from Bill, maybe 30, 40 miles. And so when I grew up, I didn't know it was bluegrass. It didn't have a name when I grew up.
Right.
It was just music, you know. And I didn't make any distinction between bluegrass and the country or whatever, you know. And they played it all on the radio at the same time. So I don't think, I never made a distinction that much. But do now, you know.
And that's a question, and Miss Dixie, you comment on this too. That's a question I've had for people that have had long careers. You know, they all say, well, there was no distinction back in those days. It was just all the same. Well, now, I don't know if it's a marketing thing or that somebody invented labels and somebody invented little placards to put in between different songs, and somehow bluegrass got kind of separated out from what was just music or what became country music, the same effect. And I think it's really hampered everybody's efforts.
Yeah, they tried that in country music. You know, when they formed the Country Music Association, it was called Country and Western Music, you know. And finally, they just did away with the Western, and it was country music. But I know the difference between bluegrass and country now, you know, because bluegrass is an acoustic music. You can take it out under a tree, you know, and just stand out there and pick, and you don't need any electricity. That's one big distinction. You don't have to have a lot of amps. And, you know, it's pretty tough to take a piano out under a tree every time you want to play.
Yeah.
So
you got to plan way ahead.
Yeah.
And you're right. That maybe that boils it down to the real essence of what bluegrass is. And we still do it. I still do it. You go in your friend's house, and maybe you sit around in the living room, and everybody has something, and everybody plays the different levels, and there's somebody that brings a banjo and a guitar, and I mean, it just depends, but that really is, you know. I hate these arguments about what is bluegrass and what isn't. To me, it's, you know, it's a feel thing, but maybe you've hit upon it, Tom.
When you feel it, it's bluegrass.
There you go.
You know, I think Jefferson said said the best thing about it. Somebody in New York or somewhere asked him what country music was. He said, well, if it sounds country, it's country. So that sounds pretty simple, but that explains it. And, you know, if they say, is that bluegrass? I said, well, if it sounds like bluegrass, it's bluegrass.
It is,
you know?
After
all, it's music, you know.
When you were young, you mentioned, and I just forget because we lost the audio for a minute, but you played so many instruments, I assume, as a youngster, and now you play different instruments too. But what were you as a child? Was there an instrument that you played more than another?
I played the bass.
Did you really?
I was in a bluegrass band called the Kentucky Travelers, and I was the bass player. And I tell everybody I was the I wasn't even the lead singer. I was the bass singer in the band, you know. And so we'd sing a gospel song. I was the guy who leaned in and said, "Oh Lordy." And so I was the old Lordy guy in the bluegrass band.
The old Lordy guy. That's a great description.
That was just about my only job. Kermit Richmond and Slim Underwood, who could sing beautifully together. Boy, they were great. I just stood in the back and played the bass fiddle. But at home, I was writing songs on my guitar, you know. So,
did you bring songs to that band?
No, the two guys, the lead singers, they were songwriters, so they'd write and sing their own songs. And since I didn't do any singing in the band except the old Lordy, I didn't do any of my songs in the band. I loved it, though. I mean, we traveled around and played. Well, we had a radio show, and we played, you know, local schools and things like that around the area, and it was a lot of fun.
Don't you miss...
What about that? Polar Bear Flower?
Yeah, we had, like Flatten Scruggs, we had a flower company, you know, they had Martha White, and we had Polar Bear Flower.
Did you really?
Yeah, and, you know, there were our sponsors on the radio, and we were kind of a small... We we were our area's flattened scrubs, in other words, you know.
Don't both of you miss the little radio stations where you could have a you could go in and play, maybe you could go perform live, and just local programming and local broadcasting, and things weren't part of a big syndicate. That's you know, to me, that's a sad state for current radio. I think I'm being editorial now. It's not about me, but I would think since you lived through that, you enjoyed that ability to be in a local show and a local radio show and a local sponsor. And
yeah, and, you know, there were not as many radio stations at that time. Because when I was in this band, I was only 13 years old. And it broke up when I was 15 because the band got drafted in the Korean War.
Mm.
So you know, a radio, there weren't very many radio stations. And the ones that we did have could reach way, you know, cover large areas because there's no interference in the you know.
It's Clear Channel. They were those big stations, especially at dark time. They would just go everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, you could hear WS back in those days. You could hear WSM in Canada and you know all out in Mexico and everywhere. It was a Clear Channel, 50,000 watts. And now they've got that narrowed down to about 300 miles. You know,
right.
Except the internet, of course.
Which is what we're on now. Now we go everywhere. Here in Cincinnati, by the way, if you're just tuning in to the show, this is very honored to have Tom T. Hall and Miss Dixie Hall on the program. We lost him for a minute, but we got him back, and we're still going here on Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass. In this area, back in those days, there was a radio station that was also on TV, and they had Midwestern Hayride. That was a big deal around here.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, that was a big TV show when they first had TV.
Mm-hmm. Everything was live, and it was all the people that came through town. They had locals that played, and live country music. I don't think there's any question that was country music.
Well, you see, here's the thing you have to remember. When I was 13, I was a radio star because there wasn't no television. We didn't have television when I was 13 years old.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to tell you how old I am, but how old do you think I am, he said. But anyway, we were radio stars, you know. We'd go someplace to put on a show. We had a lot of people turn out. Mostly just to see what we looked like, you know. Half of the audience just came to see what we looked like.
And would you do live broadcasts from radio stations back in those days?
Right.
Were you able to do, like, go to a radio station and be in there and be mic'd and be broadcasting live? Could you do that in those days?
We could only run a microphone cord out the window, and we had a program called The Man on the Street, you know, and walk around talking to people on the street and see what they were doing in town. That's the only remote broadcast we had back then.
The only remote. Okay, I understand that. Maybe I didn't ask it right. Could you go into the building where the station was and then be on the air as a band?
Yeah, as far as the microphone cord would reach, that was it.
All right, you made your point. I get it now. Okay. Grand Ole Opry. I love talking about the Grand Ole Opry and the introduction of different people into that setting. You obviously... you've performed there, and I love to talk about, you know, when I get you know, people that have long careers, and Jesse McReynolds and the Osborne Brothers and others. I like to talk about, you know, maybe when they first got to that level. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I sure do. Yeah, I was a guest a few times, and then they called me. I went off to do the Opry one night as a guest, and they said, Tom T., would you like to be a member of the Grand Ole Opry? And I said, sure. And they said, okay, you're a member. That's all there was.
That was it? And that was at the Ryman, right?
Well, I said, okay. And, it was a real... Well, they were doing it at the Ryman Auditorium then. And there's a pub, you know, called... Well, pub in Australia. But there's a pub, a little beer joint, we call them. Right out behind the Opry called Tootsie's Orchid Lounge. And so that was our dressing room for the Grand Ole Opry, which was just across the alley and up a set of steps, because there were no dressing rooms in the Ryman Auditorium. It was pretty lean days back in the, I back in there.
Tootsie's gets a mention in one of your songs, at least. Isn't that Jesus on the Radio?
Yeah, because it was our dressing room, you know, the opera store. But he hung out at, Tootsie's, and he got dressed in the street, you know.
See, we're back to taking your shirt off again, Tom. I don't know where we're going with this, but...
That's right, and they... And they serve beer, of course, you know, so that was another excuse to go over there.
Well, then you got to write a song about that, then.
Well, the ladies didn't dress in or undress in Tootsie.
Thank goodness. Thank you, Miss Dixie.
So they was the ladies' room, and Maybell and Jeannie Shepherd and Jan Allard and Wilma Lee, and there'd be a big gathering back in the, back to Margie Bowes, there, Patsy, and... Then Loretta, everybody just stood in there and dressed.
I didn't know about that room. I went back there.
No, you couldn't have got in.
See?
Couldn't have got in, Tomty.
Is there anything that compares to those days? Well, I can say that again.
What do you say?
I said Bill Anderson tried a time or two. He couldn't get in either. So.
But he was so quiet about it. He whispered his way in.
There you go.
Was there another time yet that compares to that time for you both as performers and writers? That moment you're talking about in the alley between Tootsie's and the Ryman and all that stuff, has there been another time like that as special for you?
No, that would have summed it up there. That was kind of the birth of the boom, you know, and for our lifetimes, as far as that goes, you know, they started, BMI built an office downtown, the Opry moved out to Opryland, and we started doing network television shows, so the music really started growing right along in there.
Well, and
it's been the same way for a long time up to that point, and there was kind of an explosion. And the CMA did a marvelous job. I got to give the CMA, the Music Association, credit for broadening the appeal and the recognition of country music. They, you know, when we were picking it, it was called hillbilly music.
That's right.
Which kind of a derogatory term, and not with me, I'm a hillbilly, but a lot of people were put off by that name. But if you take an organization that can change the name of a genre of music in about 15 years, you've done a great job. They changed the name of hillbilly music into country music, and I think that's a remarkable feat.
Well, you, like you said, you got to give them credit. Look what they're doing. Look how it's still going strong, and... You know, there's changes come and go as tastes change for the listening audience, but you still have that touchstone to go back to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And you know what one of the greatest touchstones is, the Stanley Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
When I came here from England in 1961, they were my heroes, and they're still my heroes today. I think they've done wonders in preserving and their loyalty to the real mountain music is awesome.
I heard Ralph once talk about, and this was back in the time when in the early 70s, what's called now Newgrass, and then all the changes that happened with that. I heard someone interviewed Ralph around that time, and he said, well, everybody else was going forwards, and he was going backwards.
Yep.
And I think that sums it up.
He was holding on.
He was
holding
on.
What a great man. What a legend.
And you know, he was on this show last fall, and I had a blast. It's like talking to you. I mean, to me, to get to talk to Ralph Stanley is just like a dream. And he was about to announce his retirement tour. And the longer we talked, he said, you know what, I might put that off for a while. And I saw him about a week later live here in Kentucky. And when we were on the show, he was going to sing one or two songs, but he wasn't. He sang every song, and just coincidentally, not as a causal effect, but coincidentally, he came out later and decided he was going to put off his retirement because I think he just loves it so much.
Yeah, he loves it, and I think what he what he said was, I'm not quitting. I'm going to let the good Lord decide when.
That's right. I think you're right. I think it's a better statement of what he was doing.
Yeah, he's gonna hang in, and thank goodness for that.
And you know, when he's got medical issues, or he doesn't, or he's tired. I mean, he's been doing this a long time. But when he gets up to the microphone and he'll sit, he doesn't hold the banjo. And Tom T, you both know, I play a banjo. They're heavy, and if you don't have to hold one, why? So he'll sit down, and when it's time for him to sing, he gets to the microphone, and it's dead on perfect, absolutely perfect pitch. Everything is perfect. All of the soul that he has is still there. And when you're watching him, you think, why should he quit?
Right.
I tell you, I'm a banjo player, too, and at my age, if I strapped on a big Gibson banjo, by the time I got to the microphone, the show would be over.
Well, they go in, 13, 14 pounds, and they wear you out. Now, you don't play...
That would be my show, walking from backstage up to the microphone.
And that would be it. Thanks for coming, folks.
Carrying a banjo.
Now, did you ever play one of those without a strap? I never asked you that question.
No, I used the strap to play the banjo.
Yeah. You know why Earl put that strap on his right shoulder?
I don't know.
Well, when you're growing up and like me and you're learning to play and you got that strap on your right shoulder, and we just thought that's where you get the best tone and the best fingering, and Earl did it, so we should all do that. Turns out he just didn't want to keep taking his hat off when he switched instruments.
That's the same reason I don't do it. That's the same reason I didn't have a strap on my guitar.
That's right.
Well, I got affection to both of you. It was Louise who told him to do that.
Oh, is that right? Okay, good. Well, see, there you go. There you go. And then when he finally decided he didn't have to wear a hat anymore, you know, sure enough, and then everybody said, okay, we're just going to put it around our neck because the daggone things are heavy.
Well, Louise was pretty heavy, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, she made a lot of wonderful decisions for his career, no question about that. Hey, Tom, let me ask you about, you did an album with Earl, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I've not seen that except on vinyl, and I've looked and looked and looked. Tell me, I want to talk to you about that one. I also want to, so many things. I don't want to take all day, and I want to talk about Magnificent Music Machine. But first, let's talk a little bit about the album you did with you and Earl on the cover.
Well, I was in between, a record contract run for like what, 3 years, and then you have to renew them, you know. So I had a 2 week span where I wasn't on a label. You know, my contract ran out, and I had to sign my agent was negotiating a new one. So I called Earl, and I said, Earl, I'm not on a label for the next 2 weeks. Let's go out and do an album. So he said, I remember, I was very flattered. He said, Tom D, the hair is standing up on my arm.
Yeah.
I said, well, don't comb it until we get out there and do an album. So we got a bunch of songs together and ran out there and recorded an album in that 2 week span when I was, you know, I think Mercury Records was a little surprised to hear it, but we had fun.
And the Magnificent Music Machine, which is just straight bluegrass, and that's like in the mid-70s, I think, if I'm right on that, you didn't just do tunes you had written. You went back and did covers like of Rank Strangers and different things, and Molly and Tin Brooks, and... How did you fit that in? Because by then, you are Tom T. Hall, the recognizable, you know, country star worldwide, and then in the middle of that time period, you went and made Magical Music Machine.
Yeah, it was just something I wanted to do, and I told Jerry Kennedy, I said, I want to do a bluegrass album, so I called all my bluegrass friends, and we had 23 people in the studio. We could only use five or six of them at a time, you know. And we had Jimmy Martin and Bill Monroe and J.T. Gray and, oh, my goodness, I can't think. We had the Stonemans and, I'm trying to think of J.D. Crow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we had a whole studio full of people. And we took us about 3 days and we did an album. And I said, Jerry, how are we going to sell this album, you know, it's not a country music album, it's a bluegrass album. He said, no, we're not going to tell them what it is, we'll just put it out. Oh, the country musicians never knew it was a bluegrass album. And I got lucky, I had Fox and the Run on that thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big hit, so that saved the whole project, and I got to do my bluegrass album.
Maybe that's the key. Just don't tell them what kind of music it is.
Yeah, I said, what are they going to think if I come out with a bluegrass album? He said, no. He said, the country music audience is not like the people on the street doing business. He said, country music fans, they don't care what it is. We just won't tell them. We just think it's a different kind of Tom T. Long album. So sure enough, nobody ever said a word. They just went out and bought it, and Fox on the Run went to number one. So
tell them about Bill Monroe.
Yes, please.
Oh, yeah, we were doing Molly and Pembroke, and Bill came in and with his man, and we tuned it up. And I said, Bill, I want you to take a break in this song, if you would, you know. And he said, sure, okay, I'll do that, Tom T. And I said, okay. So we went over facing the wall, and he was standing over there picking for, oh, 3, 4, 5 minutes. Everybody's standing around, and I went over and said, Bill, you doing okay over here? He said, Yeah. He said, I about got it. He said, I've never played this song on the mandolin before. And I was amazed. But if there was no mandolin on the record, you know, not a mandolin break.
Mm-hmm.
But I just assumed that Bill Monroe could play Molly and Pembroke on the mandolin, but he said, I've never taken a break on this song.
Well, in the song, you throw it over to him, right?
Yeah. And so I asked him to take a break, and he rehearsed it and came back over, and then I kind of name dropped a little bit when he got ready to take his break. I said, Bill Monroe.
That's right. You do that a lot. I mean, a lot of times when you're not, I don't mean throwing names out, but you do like little introductions. You do little stories that introduce the story of the song. And then maybe it's in the first opening line, but there seems to be this, you really are, both of you really want to tell the story. And then you put it to music, which makes it so much easier for us to remember, by the way. But you actually, sometimes you will have like a little lead in about what you're going to sing about. And where the story's coming from, and those little bits and pieces. And I did not know the story about Bill Monroe for Breakfast. I know that now. But it really does seem to be connecting stories of your life.
Yeah, I think sometimes the story about the song, or, you know, what it come from or whatever, to me it's always been, you know, interesting because, you know, being songwriters, and that's the way we make our living, and that's our hobby, you know, and everything, so... I love stories about songs.
When Charlie Sizemore, he did that album of all of your songs, and when he plugs into Pay No Attention to Alice, he tells a story about how you came across some guy and the woman had a problem, and is that, we've talked about that a little bit, and I know you see things out the window of the car, but if you get a little nugget like that, and later you can kind of work it into a story and flesh out the story. I'm assuming the story was filled out after you get the opening concept, but
yeah, you know, I was in the military for 8 years, and you know, you're in the Army with a guy, and he says, you know, I live in West Virginia, and if you ever up that way, give me a call, and we'll have a beer. And you always say, yeah, we'll do that, but you never see the guy again, you know. So I happened to be driving through West Virginia for some reason, and I thought, I think I'll call this old guy and see if he's still kicking around or what he's up to, and then the rest of it's in the song, of course.
Right.
I went by to see him, and we had a few toddies together, and we weren't alone. Alice was having more toddies than we were, so.
When right before I lost your, right before you were unable to hear me, you were starting to talk about some project in the works, and I don't want you to give away anything you can't, but I never did get the rest of that story.
What project was?
We were just finished talking. We were in the throes of talking about Big Country Bluegrass and the band that they are, and that was about the time that you couldn't hear me anymore.
Oh, I think Miss Dixie was talking about Daughters of Bluegrass, wasn't she? When we got
done,
we got done with them. Yeah.
All right. Well, then I didn't want to leave any ends untied.
I don't recall it.
Maybe it was Government Blues. I think that's going.
Yes,
to be.
It was Government Blues. That's what it was. Now, is that something that we can look for to be recorded soon, or Is it recorded already?
You should have it. Okay. You should already have it. Okay. If not, we'll send it to you.
All right. Well, we'll get a hold of that. And it's not political. One of you says it's not political. One of you says it is. I don't know how you do a song about the government that can't be political.
I'll sing you some of it. I know it.
Okay.
I was voted because Lord have mercy, got the government blues. You can read the paper through the soles of my shoes. Just about what's going on in the news, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes, don't you think you need to get up in the morning and not watch the news, and then things seem a whole lot cheerier to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we watch the Weather Channel. You know, we live on a farm, so we escape over to the Weather Channel most of the time. Turn on the news. If the world hadn't come to an end, we go to the Weather Channel, so. There's always something exciting going on there.
Oh yeah, and then you got the farming to do and taking care of the farm. Wow, this is so you're still writing songs, right? You're still getting little bits of information. You're still remembering and putting songs together. Is that something you think it's ever going to end?
We have written 3 songs in the last week.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you written any songs since you've been on with me? Because it's been a while.
What was that?
Have you written any songs since you've been on the air with me?
No.
It's all right. I was just checking. I know
you
you're.
Date,
well, we can't tell you. You know what Loretta would say. You can't trust any of them.
You're right. Oh my! I wish. Oh, this is. I'm enjoying this so much. Thanks so much for. I'm not rushing you out, just that I don't want to take all of your time, and I can do this kind of, you know, connecting things forever, but gosh, this has just been a wonderful opportunity, and I'm just a kid from Kentucky like you are, Tom, and I love the music from my home state. I will tell you that my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, they played in little bands back in the late 20s, early 30s, and they played in what they called roadhouses back in those days.
Yeah, I want to tell you why they call you're talking about being from Kentucky, and
yes,
I'll tell you why. I want to tell the international audience why you play the banjo. In Kentucky, they're into bluegrass music so much, you can't get a driver's license unless you can play a 5-string banjo.
That's what did it for me. And then you got to have one, and you got to actually have the picks, and you got to have the strings, and you got to have a strap, Tom. I don't care, you know. You know, if you don't wear a strap, then it becomes like needs glasses on the back. You know, it's one of those things they put as a restriction. You can't drive without a strap on your banjo.
I never thought of that. You could use Velcro, couldn't you? Yes.
I imagine a place where it was strapped.
No. Okay.
There's a song right there. I'm a banjo player, and I'm always strapped. Thank goodness I'm married to a good woman with a job.
Now, here is an irony about this radio show. We're talking to a banjo player who's named after a guitar.
That's right. That's right.
Steve plays a Gibson banjo and doesn't make any movies that I'm aware of.
No, I do not.
Hey, this is the first Steve Martin in my book, anyway.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Martin used to hang around Nashville in his early days. He worked at Opryland.
Did he really?
They worked at an Opryland. We've seen him over there all the time. And he went off to, he played the banjo and told jokes.
That's right. He plays the banjo, too, doesn't
he? Oh, sure he does.
He?
Yeah. He's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
He was on this show last May. He had an album coming out, and he stopped by and talked for about an hour. He really loves bluegrass. He really does. He loves banjos and he loves bluegrass.
He's been playing it a long time. Mm-hmm. Boy, he can fit into great guy.
He's a good fella. Well, listen, I've enjoyed this so much. I've had such a good time, and I've taken about an hour. Even if we delete that moment where we lost contact, I've had about an hour of your time, and I never like to go more than that because I feel like I'm imposing on your day.
What? You've done imposed on us enough for one day, so we'll be back.
Yes, please come back. We'll talk more, please. Let's do that. And you're all heading down to Spigma, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Steve, get to town and give us a call, and we'll make a case.
All right, we'll do that. I may see you at Spigma. If I can pull away, I may go down there for a day.
April.
All right, man. Thank you so much, Tom T. and Miss Dixie. This has been a wonderful, wonderful time for me. I hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll do it again sometime.
Okay, bye, everybody.
Bye. There, that time we meant to say goodbye. All of the music from Tom T. and Dixie Hall. You can do this forever. You can do it forever. Talk to all the music, all the writing that they've done, and they're still doing, and just what an enjoyable time. As I mentioned, for just another kid from Kentucky to talk to another one, and a legend.